Hello, folks. It's Zach Simony here and Eric Wong out here in Las Vegas. The Summer League action is taking place. It's a little bit different for us to be doing a podcast this time of year. Definitely. Usually around the football season, I'm invited on a few shows and whatnot. And I haven't done anything on a permanent basis in a long time. But me and Eric have been talking the last year, mainly through email, a couple Skype sessions and whatnot. And Summer League was when we made a decision to make sure we meet. Very similar backgrounds and the styles that we choose to do as far as handicapping and with fantasy sports. But I want to make sure from both sides of things, if you've got a great establishment on your website as well as I do, that we introduce each other. So without further ado, Eric, if you want to give a little introduction on yourself to some listeners that maybe need a little bit more background on yourself.
Yeah, what's up? This is Eric. I run rotoevil.com, top fantasy basketball website, provide draft guide information, rankings, projections, all the top sleeper picks and all that good stuff, helping people win big in their fantasy basketball leagues. In Vegas for Summer League for the first time. Pretty fun to be here. And
mainly the information, we're hoping to touch base on a couple of hot topics here with the NBA. But myself, my forte is mainly handicapping. Eric knows the background. And I did a lot of fantasy sports back in the day. Kind of gravitated away from that. But it goes hand in hand. It really does. I think I get a lot of my insight and tips from as I still play Money League Fantasy Sports, and you have to have that hand-in-hand if you're handicapping. There's a lot of strategy that can use to help you against the spread. But my website's notjustagame.com, and you can find me on some other websites out there. But, yeah, we want to touch base on the Summer League, I guess, to get things started. Eric was out there today. I've been watching it mainly on TV. I actually haven't been down there just yet, even though I'm based here in Las Vegas. But there's a few Summer League impressions you want to talk about. Maybe a few sleepers, and also we just heard the Golden State Warriors. Obviously, they made a big splash by bringing over Kevin Durant, but one of their second-round draft picks, Patrick McCall, who actually played at UNLV, he has a two-year guaranteed contract. Obviously, their roster is a bit heavy, but there's some opportunities out there with some of the veterans that have been signed elsewhere. Leo Barbosa, off the top of my head, and a couple others, Mo Spates, obviously.
Brandon Rush is gone. Yeah, McCaw's a good pickup for them. He looks to kind of fit the mold of the long, versatile defenders, athletic, who can shoot the three, which allows them to, you know, do all these defensive switches, which has been a big part of their success on the defensive end. And I thought he looked really good today going against the 76ers. An athletic kid who can shoot it, and he seems to have a bright future, so I'm happy with that pickup for the Warriors.
Yeah, and you know, I watched him a couple of times at UNLV and even on TV, but at one point last year, I think it was his first 20 games of the year, he had 3.5 steals a game, so he's definitely someone that can come off the bench. He was pretty stout from the three-point line as well. We'll see how his shooting carries over, but with Kevin Durant bringing him under his wing, yeah, he has to feel comfortable with going into that Warriors environment situation with their winning franchise.
He'll be learning from the best, that's for sure.
Speaking of the Golden State Warriors now, we kind of had a discussion yesterday on this where I think the situation might not be as perfect as people see, but you see it the other way. I know a lot of people out there in Vegas are taking the under on the prop if they will topple their win total of last year. I think it's like negative or minus 140 in that fashion. Do you think they can get it done, or do you think they're going to have some struggles? As we've seen this before where these super teams are put together and it doesn't go as planned, right off the bat anyways.
Right. There's some concern as a Warriors fan, being from the Bay Area. But, you know, at the same time, a lot of people didn't expect the Warriors to repeat their success from the season before. And while they didn't with the championship this season, they came pretty damn close. And they, of course, set the record for most wins in a season. And adding Durant to that mix just makes their offense so much more potent. Barnes, I was a fan of Harrison Barnes, but, you know, pretty inconsistent still and not as aggressive, of course, as Durant. And I think Durant's better defensively.
When he wants to be.
Right. I think he's ready to just step up his all-around game, being on this new team and in a new system where I think he'll be happier playing for the Warriors.
So 2 points, I know, because you got more lending a hand on this than I would. With Kevin Durant, with Steph Curry, obviously, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green. You kind of saw towards – now, I saw this in the playoffs myself, that Draymond Green kind of got in the way a little bit with taking too many shots, I felt. And obviously, Harrison Barnes, he was going 0-for-8, taking too many shots. And it seemed like Steph Curry didn't want to at times. Maybe he was hurt or whatever it may be. But do you think Kevin Durant can come in there, a guy that was a high-volume shooter, obviously, with Russ Westbrook, and mesh with those guys from that standpoint?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Durant can play off the ball. He had to kind of with playing with Westbrook because Westbrook needs the ball in his hands so much. And so he can play off the ball, and they have so many weapons that, you know, Draymond and Barnes felt like they had to shoot it when they were open, of course. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if you leave Durant open, that's, you know, a whole different story. And adding veterans like David West and Zaza Pachulia, I think, is really smart. They just know how to play the right way. Unselfish guys aren't going to complain about not getting shots or minutes or anything like that. So I think the Warriors are going to be just fine. And, why not? Why can't they win 74 games, win another championship?
And from, lastly, an injury standpoint, do you think these guys mentally – that I was going to play with that extra caution, I can't get hurt, I can't get hurt. And I've seen that also be a factor. Do you think the team can go through the season healthy?
Well, you know, cross your fingers on Curry, especially after he got hurt in these playoffs. But, you know, he'd been pretty healthy before that. And, they can afford to rest guys through minor injuries just because they have so much talent now.
Okay. And with the Summer League, we do touch base on that. I think it's growing. And what I like about it, there's so many college players from the past that obviously may be overseas. They're not going to be on the rosters. We know that. But they're overseas. It's a great opportunity for them. And I think the NBA does a great job, especially since Adam Silver became commissioner, of making it a better Summer League experience, because the last 2-3 years it's grown. We're seeing a lot more teams play their key draft picks in these Summer League games. I know the Suns, and about halfway through, teams are going to sit those key players like Devin Booker, Justice Winslow, Josh Richardson. Teams are now sitting those key players, but we're still seeing if they're not showing their performance, kind of like preseason football, if they're not showcasing their abilities the way teams want to see, they're going to be back on that court, kind of like Dragon Bender and some of these other younger guys that aren't playing up to par. So they make sure that these guys are getting that experience until they show that, hey, it's worth sitting them down and getting some rest. So from that standpoint, I think Summer League is a key asset, because you're going to see these same names at the end of the season, the NBA regular season. James Enos, we were just talking about before the podcast, who was a key contributor for the Pelicans last year. He crushed it the last two Summer Leagues for the Miami Heat. A guy that just got a big contract from the Atlanta Hawks, Kenny Bazemore. Same thing with when he was on the Golden State Warriors. He got his launching pad experience by breaking out in the Summer League. So what do you think from that standpoint? Does it help you towards the end of the main money leagues in the NBA on picking up some of these guys, or do you stay with the key names?
Oh, at the end of the season, I mean, you just got to go with whoever's getting minutes, because so many stars are resting, and so many of these guys who weren't really playing at all are suddenly getting big minutes for whatever reason. And, you know, you got to have the intel on those guys, and that's where Summer League comes into play, because if you're paying attention, you can see the flashes of talent and know that, you know, they might not get minutes or even make a roster at the beginning of the season, but just have that back in the back of your mind for later in the season when they get their chance. And it's definitely a good thing to use Summer League for, just scouting for those type of players.
Okay. Well, we have a couple other main topics we wanted to discuss. Obviously, free agency. We touched on the Golden State Warriors, so I don't think we need to talk about Kevin Durant anymore. But there were a lot of peculiar signings. Obviously, the inflated salary cap with the TV deal is largely to do with that. And before I get your opinion on this, Eric, I saw this before kind of with the NFL, and they raised their salary cap. And, you know, Dan Schneider was infamous for just throwing his money out there. Do you think teams are kind of just too aggressively throwing their money out there, and it might come back to bite them like Dan Schneider in the early 2000s through 2005, 2006 when he was just throwing money at, just basically throwing away.
Definitely. I mean, some of these teams just have to spend the money because they have it. And, you know, if you don't spend the money, then you're not going to get the talent. But some of these contracts are a little puzzling. I'm going to start with Ryan Anderson getting $80 million over 4 years, $20 million a season, going to Houston for a team that struggled defensively to begin with. And, you know, obviously Harden is one of the culprits there. Adding a guy like Ryan Anderson is definitely not going to help their defense. And, you know, he's coming off some serious injuries the past couple of years, and that's a lot to pay a guy like that who's, you know, dealing with injuries and not necessarily on the rise anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree 100% with Ryan Anderson. I mean, he's a guy, obviously, that can stretch the floor, which is, we were talking about maybe the Channing Frye types that are out there. Channing Frye, he was a key asset in the playoffs, but can he be that guy that can knock that down consistently without having 25 minutes? Can he do it with 12, 13 minutes? Or are they going to expect more out of him? I'm not sure. The Houston Rockets are one of those teams that who knows what they're doing, but obviously they still believe James Harden is that centerpiece. They let Dwight Howard go, and they're rebuilding again.
Another contract that was a little puzzling to me was Timofey Mozgov getting $64 million over 4 years from the Lakers. For a team that's, you know, in rebuild mode, got some young athletes, I don't really see how Mozgov fits in there. And he's another guy who was coming off a knee injury prior to last season, who, and you could tell that really hurt him in the first half of last season, and his minutes, you know, went way down. And you would think the Lakers would try to go after, you know, maybe a more athletic, younger center than Mozgov. But they chose to give him $64 million. Another guy, Jamal Crawford, $42 million over 3 years for the Clippers. They must really like him. I guess it's a part of team chemistry, right? They don't want to mess with their chemistry, but at the same time, he's getting pretty old, and he's another guy who is a liability on the defensive end.
Yeah, with that, I think the Clippers are one of those teams that the last 2 years I was waiting for them to do something major, make a major change, and instead they re-signed Jamal Crawford, they re-signed DeAndre Jordan, they re-signed Wes Johnson, they re-signed Austin Rivers. They just keep re-signing these guys when we know they're a player or two away. I just don't understand why they keep that same group intact. What do you think about that, Eric?
Yes, it's a little puzzling. I guess that's the way Doc Rivers likes to do things.
Yeah.
But maybe Mo Spates can be the difference maker.
Oh, yeah. Oh, boy. He's a spark, but we know that team's going to be in trouble. They might fall under projections, I think, this year. Chris Paul, when is he turning 31, 32 years old? He's starting to get up there, and obviously there's a higher burden on him and Blake Griffin to stay healthy, and I just don't see it happening in that Western Conference. But let's go from key signings to talking about key team changes, and I think the Portland Trailblazers are a team I want to touch on as far as what they've done. Last year they let players walk away, and it worked out to their favor. Obviously, the Marcus Aldridge kind of just decided to go to San Antonio for the money. But they let players go away, and key players filled in. Plumlee filled in. Allen Crabbe, who they re-signed, 4 years for $75 million. And they also signed Evan Turner, 4 years, $70 million. So are they doing too much with that money now? Or do you think it's a good idea to match that offer that Philadelphia had on Allen Crabbe and also bring in Evan Turner, who's kind of been up and down throughout his career?
Right, that's definitely a lot of money to throw at those two guys, but I can understand it for a guy like Crabbe because he's a young guy on the rise who is kind of coming into his own, and he's a 3-and-D guy who, you know, you want as many of those quality 3-and-D guys as you can. He's kind of proven that he can be that type of player, and Evan Turner's probably smart because he gives them another ball handler. Maybe it'll allow Lillard and McCollum to play off the ball some more, not wearing them out so much. And I thought they got great value with Festus Ezeli, signing him to compete with Plumlee, Ed Davis, Noah Vonleh, Myers Leonard. They got a lot of depth now.
Okay, and so with that starting five pretty much going to remain the same, do you think it can stay intact? Do you think they all peaked, or do you think they can keep growing forward, especially C.J. McCollum?
Oh, I mean, all these guys are relatively young, and I think they're all on the rise. Al-Farouq Aminu, Mo Harkless played really well at the end of last year, and all these guys are, you know, in their mid-20s. And I think Portland is a team you definitely want to watch out for. They're just going to get better and better.
So we're hearing it right now from Eric. So let's give a projection of an over-under. As you like doing over-under. So let's say last year they won, what was it, 46 games maybe? We're checking right now. But let's say the over-under is 51.5. Would you take that going into next year, the over or the under?
That's a pretty steep steep over-under for them.
Keep it down to 47, 48? Would you keep it down in that range?
Yeah, I'm trying to get their record from last year. It's not cooperating with me.
I want to say it was 46. I'm usually pretty good with that stuff, but I want to say it was 46. So you say keep it at 47, 48, and
I'll say an even 50 wins for them.
So you would take the over?
This coming season.
Oh, 44.
Yeah, they only were 44. So, yeah, I'd say, like, a good over-under would be, like, 49 wins.
49 wins.
For the upcoming season.
We'll see if Vegas puts that out there. I'm surprised. I didn't think there was that many teams that were below 50 wins last year. But, hey, that threw me off a little bit. But so another team I wanted to touch on with a lot of changes and get your take as well, Eric, with the Atlanta Hawks. They shipped out Jeff Teague. Obviously, they're going to go with Schroeder as the young point guard and the leader of the future. They signed Ken Bazemore, the summer league guy from a couple years ago, who kind of came to his own in the playoffs a little bit for them. They kind of broke the mold with sitting Tim Hardaway Jr., which I was kind of shocked with that, as he was getting some big minutes before the playoffs, and then he kind of went towards Bazemore's direction. And then also, obviously, Al Horford signed with the Boston Celtics. So how do you see Dwight Howard, now the new guy there, and Paul Millsap, whose contract's going to be up this year, how do you see the Atlanta Hawks projecting in a tough Eastern Conference where they went from a 60-win team last year to, 48 wins this year and just dismantled in the playoffs?
Right. I like the decision to hand the keys over to Schroeder, see what he can do. He obviously wants that responsibility, and I think he has the talent. And Howard should be a nice pick-and-roll partner for him, so that's probably going to be their bread and butter. But at the same time, you know, you have to – there's a lot of question marks there. How are Millsap and Howard going to coexist? Can Kyle Korver bounce back? He had a pretty bad season, kind of dealing with some injuries and whatnot, and he's getting up there in age. You don't really know what you're going to get from Tim Hardaway Jr. He hasn't really proven himself yet. And, you know, they don't have as much depth as some of these other teams. So I would be worried if I was a Hawks fan. You know, a lot of it's going to depend on how well Howard does, and maybe he's ready to you know, shut up some of his critics, but I have trouble seeing them making big improvements over last year.
And I think the Hawks organization has proven they've been able to make some key moves over the past few years, and it's worked out to their favor. I think when they signed Paul Millsap, or they got him via trade or whatever it was, I was like, oh, that's not going to work, but it ended up working in their favor. Obviously, Jeff Teague took a while, but he came along. So now they're going in a different direction. Schroeder definitely has the speed, but I don't know if he has the consistency, but it's something they're going to have to just roll with. Paul Millsap, obviously, I think everybody knows he's going to sign somewhere else after this year. So we'll see if they keep him or do a sign-and-trade type thing to get him out of there. But I don't see Atlanta having the same success they've had the past couple of years. We'll talk on two more teams that have kind of flipped the script, maybe three, but you want to talk about the Milwaukee Bucks.
Yeah, I really like what the Bucks did. Pretty minor signings in Dellavedova and Mirza Teletovic, but I think those are really important signings for a team that struggled with a three-point shot. And adding Teletovic, I believe he set the NBA record for most threes made coming off the bench last year. And he's just played for Jason Kidd in Brooklyn, and he's just going to be their weapon off the bench to shoot threes. And then Matthew Dellavedova, hard-nosed point guard, either a great backup or maybe they'll even choose to start him over Carter Williams, since they don't seem to have too much faith in MCWs, but he just gives them, you know, some insurance at point guard. And obviously with studs like Antetokounmpo and Middleton, Jabari Parker just on the rise and coming into their own here. And then, of course, they drafted Thon Maker, who has been a Summer League standout, very active,
yes,
big
is.
Man, getting double-doubles. So I like what the Bucks did this offseason.
Yeah, my question with Milwaukee, and this is kind of, I was going against them as the season wound down because they had all those injuries, but they don't have anyone to space the floor from a three-point standpoint. Chris Middleton is obviously their lone guy, but who's going to make the three-pointers? I think Mirza Teletovic gets more minutes, maybe one of those six-man that has the 25-30-minute range. Or we know Carter Williams and Tyler Ennis have been hurt the past 2-3 years, so where are they going to get that reliability on the offensive side of the floor?
Right, well, I think what we might see them do is trade Greg Monroe. He's supposedly been on the trading block for a long time now, and I think any reasonable offer, they're going to be willing to deal him. And, yeah, I could see them going small and playing Teletovic at the five as a stretch big man and, you know, Jabari Parker and the Greek Freak as well in the front court with Middleton. And then they get more shooting and lots of athleticism there. And, then of course, they can bring guys like John Henson off the bench for some rim protection.
But it's definitely a young team that I like. I've seen them. They pulled off a couple of big upset wins last year over Portland as a double-digit underdog, as their youth can give them a win any night. And, you know, obviously they lost O.J. Mayo, who's now suspended via PED, so he was one of their guys that could shoot threes, but he'll be out for a couple of years. Another team I think we should touch base on here, Eric, are the Indiana Pacers. Just real quick, obviously they signed Thaddeus Young. They got Jeff Teague via trade. They signed Al Jefferson. They shipped out George Hill to Utah. And I don't know if they got assets via that trade either, but they're a team that totally remodeled, and I think it's a good thing. Paul George is kind of at that point right now where you either ride with him or you go in a different direction, and it looks like they're going to try to ride with him at least a couple more years.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when Paul George is healthy, he's a superstar. And they need to prove to him that they're willing to surround him with better players. So getting a guy like Thad Young who can run the floor with these guys, I think, is really smart. And Al Jefferson is a great veteran big man to, you know, they'll probably bring him off the bench and continue to start Miles Turner, but he'll just help with Turner's development. And obviously Turner had a great rookie season. And Jeff Teague should be an upgrade over George Hill, and they'll probably look to push the ball more since they got Teague pushing it and Thad Young running the floor. Kind of the question mark there is Monte Ellis, who you know, is not a great three-point shooter, and
he's lost a few steps.
Yeah, he's not the same player he once was, but he still likes to shoot it a lot.
Yeah.
So that might be one of their downfalls there.
Yeah, I mean, you hit the nail on the head with Monta Ellis. He drove me nuts last year. Anytime I actually had the Pacers, he made a lot of boneheaded plays. And they're a team that just drive you nuts because they can go on some – they're probably the spurtiest team – or last year they were the spurtiest team in the NBA. They would either just tank for a full quarter or they would come back from a huge deficit. So Paul George, though, he showed me a lot last year coming back from the injury for a full season. The Pacers, they could shock some people if – you know, Larry Bird's always been the type that can make the key moves at the right time. He wasn't afraid to let Rick Carlisle go, and now he's got the mold in place again with some new players to revive the Pacers. I think we'll touch on last the Bulls, who obviously they made a decision like a lot of these teams to finally get rid of the veterans, and this was a team we actually talked about yesterday. A little bit, but Derrick Rose gone, Joakim Noah gone, and now they have Jerian Grant in the fold, Dwayne Wade, some draft picks that have been waiting in the wings, plus this year's draft picks. Do you feel they are going to have one of those non-improvement type years, just kind of stuck in the mud, or do you think they can represent in that tough Eastern Conference?
It's really tough to see to see what's going to happen to the Bulls. Just having Rondo and Wade in the backcourt is kind of hard to wrap my head around. two guys who are not known for their outside shooting. and you know how that's going to play out. I love Jimmy Butler, and Robin Lopez was a smart replacement for Pau Gasol, but they're going to need Nikola Mirotic making tons of threes in order to space the floor for Rondo and Wade on the court together. It could turn out well. I guess I do like it in the fact that Rondo and Wade could be good mentors for their younger guards, Jerian Grant and Denzel Valentine. But in terms of short-term success, I'm not sure if they're going to be a 50-win team. That would surprise me.
Yeah, it definitely would surprise me too. I think Dwayne Wade, Pat Riley's always known to make the right decision at the right time. He probably got the max out of Dwayne Wade from a health standpoint last year, because I think the last 3 years he drove LeBron James crazy with the injuries that he would suffer and put on his back. So the Bulls, they're one of those teams. Jimmy Butler, he had some issues last year. Mirotic, I can't stand. Another guy that takes a lot of bad shots when he's on the floor, but hopefully he's matured enough. Towards the end of the year, he did show me a little bit in the last 10 to 12 games, but that might just be because it was the final stretch of the season. Doug McDermott, I think this is a team where you might see more sleepers than you may think that are behind these veterans. Doug McDermott and Denzel Valentine might be two guys that, from your standpoint, would you be looking at as possible sleepers for fantasy basketball from a long-term standpoint?
Well, I guess the problem there is that, they're not big enough to play power forward. McDermott, I mean, they might try to play McDermott at power forward, but they're going to get killed on the glass if they do that.
Yeah.
And I do like McDermott, but it's just hard to see him getting minutes unless Dwayne Wade or Butler get hurt.
But in the Fred Hoiberg system, the run and gun, do you think that is irregardless of his system? Because a lot of times last year he would just throw those guys in he made some puzzling rotation moves last year, and I'm not sure if he's going to change that. Maybe an assistant coach changeover will help him with those decisions, but you think they just stick to the veterans for max minutes per game? Or
well, that's what further confuses the issue with the Bulls, is that Hoiberg already had some problems in his first year with Chicago, and now they add all these new pieces, and I don't think Hoiberg exactly knows what he wants to do, and now he has these new pieces to figure out, and there are some pretty tricky ones in Rondo, especially who's known to clash with coaches and has some obvious weaknesses. So I really can't tell you what's going to happen with Chicago, but it'll be interesting to watch.
Okay. Well, we're hitting that 30-minute mark, so we'll try to wrap things up here probably in the next 5 to 10 minutes. But those are some good teams that we broke down a little bit. Hope you got some interesting tidbits out of that. But from a standpoint in the summer league, I did want to touch on a few players. Isaiah Whitehead, I feel like he's doing a good job for Brooklyn. That's a team that is obviously in the mold of they don't know what they're going to do. They just got a new GM and Sean Marks, who brought in a new coach, Kenny Atkinson. So they're a team that should have a lot of interesting pieces from a fantasy basketball standpoint. But I wanted to get your take, Eric, here on this final stretch on, one, tell people a little bit how you've been successful in these NBA money leagues. I know we had the intro earlier, but we didn't really delve into that. And how do you stay? The NBA is one of the longest seasons from October. Well, it ends. You said it ends in the regular season for the leagues that you're in. So October through April, and plus the pre-planning. So we're probably talking September through April. How do you get how do you mentally dial in from a week-to-week basis in preparation in a league that's filled with injuries and inconsistency?
Right. The NBA season is definitely a marathon, and you have to it's not easy staying focused all season long. And one thing that really benefits me, and obviously benefits my customers and followers, is that I only focus on basketball. I don't really pay attention to baseball or football at all. I don't care about those sports anymore. So all my attention goes to basketball, which means that I'm as dialed in as can be, and am able to devote 100% of my sports watching time and sports following time to basketball. And I think that kind of separates me from other websites and other people who play fantasy sports, and And it's helped me win pretty big in these high-stakes fantasy leagues in the NFBKC, National Fantasy Basketball Championship. I am the all-time money leader and have won back-to-back main event titles, which is their big contest, and have won their Super League a couple times. And many of my readers have also been very successful in those leagues. So if you're playing in fantasy basketball leagues and haven't heard of Roto Evil, you should probably check it out. And I'm sure I can help you win big in the coming season.
Now, from what I found pretty interesting when we were having our conversation yesterday via a couple of cold ones, the college basketball aspect, you don't focus on that at all either. So it's all NBA. So how do you, the new names that are out there, you're getting your experience and fresh takes from them just early on in the regular season, or do you take a risk on saying, I think this player is going to fit well in this system or this draft system? Because there's a lot of players that come right in right away and are beneficial in the fantasy basketball type leagues.
Rookies can be beneficial, but at the same time, they're also very inconsistent, and a lot of rookies that are strong in the second half aren't really helping you in the first half of the season. So, I take a more cautious approach when it comes to rookies, but obviously there are some rookies that are just too talented and get too many minutes to ignore. And of course, Ben Simmons is looking like the likely rookie of the year because he's just going to get so many minutes for Philly, and is definitely a serious talent.
Now, we're going to a couple more quick topics, and I hate to be asking you all these questions, but I know people love to hear this stuff, and it's a basketball-mainly podcast, so I want to try to get that fresh take from you. So categories, there are certain categories that you feel that you have the extreme upper hand versus the in these money leagues, that where do you think you get the main upper hand in those leagues? Because I know every point is crucial. It's just like in my high-stakes fantasy football leagues, I feel I can get an extra edge but in the tight end position or even the kicker position. Do you feel there's a particular category that you thrive on that people just are overlooking or not planning out properly? Or do you think it's just an overall encompass of your knowledge on just having that proper team in place?
A big part, since I mostly play in roto leagues, a big part is balance. You don't want too much imbalance in your team. Sometimes if I see a guy like DeAndre Jordan fall too far, I have to draft him. But obviously that screws up your free throw percentage pretty badly. And I would prefer to have a balanced team that is strong in all categories as opposed to dominating a few categories, but then being weak in a couple others. So I definitely strive for balance, but there isn't a particular category or position that I focus on, I don't think.
Well, I think we're at that 35-minute mark. I think that does it on this podcast. I had a great time. Happy to finally meet Eric in person. We're definitely going to try to do a podcast. Hopefully it just depends on how busy you are. I know we're both going to be real busy coming up, but hopefully at least once a month, or if we can get a bi-weekly show going and fit a half hour show in, even if it's less, 15, 20 minutes, we'll make sure we can get something going. Because we definitely want to have that mesh of handicapping takes, and maybe we'll be talking about some of these rookies and seeing if they're worth picking up, in the preseason, as I know Vegas will have some games going on here. But it was great doing this podcast. Do you have anything last to add, Eric, on maybe a last topic or a tidbit of advice?
No, it was great to finally meet you, Zach. And if you're not familiar with Zach's work, he's one of the top handicappers around, and he can help you make some great picks. And I look forward to collaborating in the future, so this should be fun.
We'll definitely try to get some over-unders on the next podcast. Right, Eric?
Nice. Sounds good.
All right. Signing off, folks. Thanks for listening.